Israel continues its bombing and shelling campaign in Gaza as the death toll for more than 6 months of indiscriminate attacks nears 33,700. The UK government comes under fire from human rights groups for refusing to end arms sales to Israel amid the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Also in the headlines, the naval force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps seizes a cargo ship in the Persian Gulf with links to the Israeli regime. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The Israeli military's relentless attacks on the Gaza Strip continue to take more civilian lives. At least 29 people were killed when a home in central Gaza City was hit. Another 20 civilians lost their lives in Israeli strikes on other areas across the coastal sliver. Israeli forces also targeted a number of journalists in the Nusayrat camp, central Gaza, causing casualties. According to medical sources, one of the journalists is in critical condition. More than 33,600 people have been killed in Gaza since Israel began its genocidal war there. Thousands more remain missing. A Geneva-based human rights organization has estimated that over 13,000 Gazans are unaccounted for. Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor says many of those missing are either under the rubble or have been buried in indiscriminate mass graves. In the Gaza Strip, civil defense volunteers are trying to retrieve the bodies from under the rubble of bombed-out buildings following the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the city of Khan Yunis. As the regime's indiscriminate attacks continue, our correspondent Mutaba Masaba joined us earlier from central Gaza with more details.
In the meantime, when it comes to Khan Yunis city, as you know, that the medical staff and the civil defense crews still this moment are working on extracting more dead bodies and corpses which were left behind the massive destruction inflicted by the Israeli occupation forces in that area. Over the last 24 hours, 10 Palestinian dead bodies were extracted from the rubble of those destroyed houses, particularly in Al-Amal neighborhood located in the western part of Khan Yunis city. So the current situation is still tense across all areas of Gaza Strip, basically here in the central area of Gaza Strip and Al-Nusayrat refugee camp, where the Israeli military operation is still underway with more relentless attacks against that area. What happened in Khan Yunis is horrific because, as you know, that for roughly 4 consecutive months and the Israeli occupation forces have been attacking and were attacking that area, including the aerial, the land, and even the sea attacks from the sea. The entire residential buildings were destroyed. We are talking about entire residential squares that were wiped out of the map. 50% of the house units and the constructions and the buildings in Khan Yunis city were completely or partially destroyed, knowing that Khan Yunis was the second largest city in Gaza Strip. So now Khan Yunis was literally reduced to be the city of rubble. Wherever you turn your eyes in Khan Yunis city, you would observe and see the rubble and the mounds of debris left behind those constant and chronic attacks that were hitting that area. What happened in Khan Yunis is indescribable, unbelievable, because everything was reached by the Israeli occupation forces on the ground or by the Israeli warplanes was destroyed completely, including the infrastructure, the streets, the residential buildings, the health facilities. Everything was destroyed. Khan Yunis was completely reduced to be an unlivable place.
The military wing of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement has carried out fresh retaliatory attacks on several Israeli cities and settlements in the occupied territories. The Al-Quds brigades targeted the city of Sderot and several settlements surrounding the Gaza Strip with multiple rockets. There has been no reports of damage or casualties so far. The Islamic Jihad movement said the attacks were in response to the Israeli regime's crimes against Palestinians. The Al-Quds brigades also managed to capture an Israeli Skylark drone over the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. Palestinian resistance fighters from different groups have carried out numerous such attacks on Israeli positions in retaliation for the ongoing Gaza genocide. They've also been putting up stiff resistance to Israeli forces on the ground in Gaza. Reactions are pouring in after the British government said that it will not suspend arms exports to Israel. Now a UK-based organization called the Campaign Against Arms Trade says London is complicit in the regime's war crimes.
David Cameron's announcement that the UK will continue arming Israel is outrageous and illegal, given the mounting and indisputable evidence that Israel is committing war crimes amounting to genocide. Rishi Sunak, David Cameron, and the rest of the government, alongside the UK arms trade, are complicit in these war crimes, and they should face the consequences of this complicity.
Campaign Against Arms Trade also said the UK government treats Palestinian lives with utter contempt and is only seeking to serve the interests of arms dealers. It also called on British citizens to keep up pressure on the government, as well as the Labour Party, to totally ban weapon sales to Israel. Meanwhile, UK-based charity Oxfam says London's decision is illegal and immoral.
It's illegal, immoral, and inconsistent for the UK to continue to sell arms to Israel when it is clear that UK-made weapons and components are being used in serious violation of international humanitarian law.
Shivji also called on the UK government to work for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and to use this power to ensure aid delivery to the besieged territory. The British Foreign Minister announced on Tuesday that London's position on arms sales to Israel remained unchanged. David Cameron said the government will not block arms exports to Israel by British companies. That after over 600 British legal experts, including judges and lawyers, signed a letter calling on the government to halt arms sales to Israel. Britain supplied over $50 million of arms to Israel in 2022. Well, London people have once again hit the streets to slam Israel's atrocities in Gaza and to call for an immediate halt to its genocidal onslaught against Palestinians. The protesters also condemned the UK government's support for Israel. The Naval Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, the IRGC, has seized a cargo ship with ties to the Israeli regime. The vessel was intercepted in the Persian Gulf waters on Saturday. The Portugal flagship, called MSC Ares, is reportedly linked to the London-based Zodiac Maritime Company, which is owned by an Israeli billionaire. MSC says there were 25 crew members on board a container ship captured by the Islamic Republic. The ship has been transferred to Iran's territorial waters in an instant reaction to the seizure of the vessel. The Israeli military said Tehran will bear the consequences for, quote, choosing to escalate the situation any further. When it comes to the state of Palestine, there is an obstacle which stands in the way of stating Palestine as a state, and that is that it has not been officially recognized as one, especially when it comes to the UN. Now, recently, many countries have shown interest in Palestinian statehood due to Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. Let's check out what road Palestine has traveled to when it comes to statehood. Israel has carried out fresh strikes on areas in southern Lebanon. Hezbollah resistance movement has also targeted Israeli military positions. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh joined us earlier from Beirut with more details.
This morning, of course, we woke up to the sound of the warplanes. In addition to the sound of the continuous hovering of the drones, the Israeli UAVs, of course, are continuously in Lebanese airspace. But we had a very heavy strikes on the valley of Al Raihan, which is in the Aqlim al-Fatah area. This area closer to Nabatiyeh, it is considered relatively away from the border. We also had two different artillery fire from the Israelis on the town of Taibe, as well as Hula. They are on the eastern side of the border. But we also had another strike in the valley of Beit Leif, which is on the western side of the border. That was something we could hear from here very clearly. It was very loud sound of shelling. Hezbollah had made it clear yesterday that they will not, of course, be taking the Israeli shelling lightly, especially against areas where you see that there is destruction of civilian houses and residential areas. Despite the fact that we did not have any civilian casualties, usually Hezbollah launches Katyusha rockets when there are civilian casualties, even wounded civilians. Hezbollah seems to be taking things a step further. This is probably a new phase where Hezbollah is sending a message to the Israelis that they will not only just tolerate attacking civilians directly, but even civilian areas or civilian houses that are targeted. And this is why yesterday we saw a salvo of Katyusha rockets against the barracks of Zaoura.
Pro-Palestine conference has been canceled by police in Germany's capital as the European country continues its crackdown on pro-Palestinian gatherings. Speakers from Palestine and around the world were supposed to address the conference. Our correspondent Dieter Heinisch reports from Berlin.
German police have stormed the pro-Palestine conference in the capital Berlin and arrested a number of participants. The Palestine Congress was an important event for the Palestinian solidarity movement in Europe. It was set to be held in the German capital from April 12 to 14. The participants aimed to denounce Israeli apartheid and genocide and Germans' complicity in the genocide of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
We are the Palestine Congress. We accuse the Israeli state of carrying out genocide. And we accuse the German government of supporting, of abetting, of making possible this genocide.
On Friday afternoon, several hundred activists assembled in South Berlin to attend the conference. Soon after the conference started, it was interrupted by the city's police, which had dispatched more than 900 police officers to the area. Outside the conference venue, police officers arrested a man for hoisting a Palestinian flag on a building. The participants inside the conference venue also faced repression. Even the registered journalists were refused entry by the police officers who had been deployed inside the conference hall.
I was in the list, and as the moment as I came, they told me I'm not allowed to enter because there were too many people already inside.
The first part of the conference focused on the history of Palestine.
May marks 76 years since the Palestinian Nakba, 76 years of colonization, of forced exile. However, next month also marks 76 years of resilience, 76 years of a struggle for liberation.
The German police stormed the event during a speech by the Palestinian researcher Salman Abu Sitta, who addressed the conference via video link because he had been not allowed to enter Germany. Police said he was subject to a ban on political activity in the country.
The Palestine Congress was happening. We were watching a video. The police came in, shut down the electricity. They didn't give a justification about it. They didn't tell us why. Nevertheless, the police came here, shut it down, said it in the loudspeaker. People are supposed to leave the building right now. You see, they're already taking people.
Chaotic scenes followed. At least two people were arrested inside the hall and several others were interrogated. German Interior Minister Nancy Faeser hailed the police, saying it was good how the police had reacted.
An hour after the start of the conference, German police stormed the conference hall because of a speech on the history of Palestine. In an act of extreme repression, they broke up the conference, declaring it an illegal assembly. However, the Palestine Solidarity Movement vows to continue the conference tomorrow. Dieter Reinisch from Berlin.
France has quickly walked back comments from their foreign minister that Israel could be sanctioned for refusing to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza. Analysts say the move reveals the deep power of the French Zionist lobby. Rami Mazari has more from Paris.
Just one day after France's foreign minister earned praise for saying that sanctions on Israel could be coming over their refusal to allow humanitarian aid to Gaza, he quickly backtracked in a session before Parliament. Many are saying the episode revealed the uniquely powerful sway Zionism has in France.
France, although it has the biggest Jewish community in Europe, has also the most extreme right-wing anti-Palestinian Jewish community in Europe. And this community, this Jewish community in France, has a lot of saying and a lot of control over the media, over the political class. So you have very few people within this community who are protesting what's going on in the Middle East, not like the United States and Great Britain.
The majority of France's Jews fled from former French colonies in Africa once those countries gained independence in the 1950s and 1960s, and they reportedly brought with them stringent anti-Arab and pro-imperialist views.
In 2019, French Parliament controversially and incorrectly equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, and they are currently reviewing a proposal to fully criminalize anti-Zionism.
They're saying straight, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Therefore, any criticism of Zionism, any criticism of Israel, means you are a criminal because you're an anti-Semite. And so it's killing all debate. Now, all throughout the collective West, but especially in France, the number one threat to freedom of speech is the Zionist movement and the pro-Israeli movement. And I weigh my words because it's very, very dangerous to say something like that in France because you'll find yourself in court.
Since October 7th, support for Hamas and even support for Palestine is often being prosecuted as so-called apology for terrorism. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations were banned nationwide for weeks, leading to thousands of fines on protesters, with protesters arrested and prosecuted for apology for terrorism for as little as carrying a Palestinian flag. Without the ability to openly criticize the policies of Israel, many believe it's difficult to imagine that Paris will reduce its unconditional support for Tel Aviv, no matter how many atrocities and war crimes they commit against Palestinians. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Several people have been killed and a number of others seriously injured following a stabbing attack at a shopping mall in Sydney, Australia.
I'm advised that there are five victims who are now deceased as a result of the actions of this offender. There are more than several other people who have been conveyed to hospital. A number of those are in serious and or critical conditions at this stage.
The Assistant Police Commissioner of New South Wales confirmed that a knife-wielding man was shot dead after he randomly stabbed shoppers. He did not reveal the identity of the assailant. Several injured were taken to the hospital. The police say the investigation is underway to determine the reason behind the attack. Authorities have already evacuated the mall and asked people to avoid the area. Several posts on social media showed crowds fleeing the mall and police cars and emergency services rushing to the spot. Witnesses said they heard shots and saw people lying on the ground and others taking shelter. And that does for this edition of World News. Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Thanks to the heroic Operation Al-Aqsa Storm of October 7th, 2023, American hypocrisy has also been fully exposed to the whole world. And no matter what hostile posture the regime in Washington adopts against the Axis of Resistance and the Islamic Republic of Iran, the cobweb called Israel will definitely be wiped off the map of West Asia region. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Keihan International wrote, in June 1967, during the Six-Day War, the illegal Zionist entity vanquished four national armies of Arab states, neighboring Palestine, and occupied territories, more than double its illegitimate size. The northern part of Syria's Golan Heights, the area south of Lebanon's River Litani, the entire region west of River Jordan, including the Islamic holy city of Beit al-Muqaddas, and Egypt's Sinai Peninsula. After overrunning, in a few hours, the then Egyptian-administered Gaza sliver. Today, over 66 years later, Usurper Israel is struggling for the past 6 months to reoccupy the barely 40 kilometers long and hardly 10 kilometers wide Gaza Strip, even after bombing to death more than 33,000 civilians, mostly women and children, as well as medics, journalists, refugees, and international relief workers, severely injuring 80,000 others and destroying the entire infrastructure, including schools, hospitals, mosques, and churches, but miserably failing to achieve its goal of wiping out the Palestinian Liberation Movement. In the process, some 1,500 Zionists, including top commanders, have been killed by Gaza's resistance forces, who have also destroyed scores of Merkava tanks and over 100 armored carriers, besides continuing their rocket barrages on several towns and cities of the 1948 occupied parts of Palestine. It is clear the victors of the Washington-directed genocide of the Gazans are not the child-killing regime and its terrorist backer, Genocidal Joe, U.S. President Joe Biden, but the victims of the Holocaust themselves and the Palestinian Liberation Movement, such as Hamas and Islamic Jihad. This is the undeniable reality of the current conflict, which has awakened the public conscience of the entire world, especially of the long-deceived people of North America and West Europe, who since the planting of the Zionist entity in the heart of the Muslim world had been tricked into sympathizing with usurper Israel. The taxpayers no longer want their hard-earned money to be siphoned off for the survival of spurious states and its devilish regime, which is the enemy of all humanity and humanitarian values. In other words, the end of the illegal Zionist entity whose very establishment was and is against the tenets of Judaism is near. This is the reason the US regime is sending hundreds of billions of dollars lethal weapons to the Zionist entity in the vain hope of averting the inevitable, while sending its overinflated navy to the Red Sea to try to deter Yemen from helping the persecuted Palestinian people by blocking vessels bound for Omer Ashrash Port, Eilat, on the Gulf of Aqaba. Thanks to the heroic Operation Al-Aqsa Storm of October 7, 2023, American hypocrisy has also been fully exposed to the whole world. And no matter what hostile posture the regime in Washington adopts against the axis of resistance and the Islamic Republic of Iran, the cobweb called Israel will definitely be wiped off of the map of the West Asia region. Meanwhile, the Electronic Intifada wrote, in Gaza, if you get sick, you either wait for God's mercy or wait for your death. There is little to nothing by way of treatment. If every Palestinian in Gaza spoke about their loss and suffering, the sea would run dry before these stories could end. Palestinians
have lost their cities and towns with their memories, streets, schools, mosques, and churches. Both Gaza's history and present are being wiped out. In the heart of every challenge lies the seed of hope, and amid every tragedy, the strength of resilience and willpower shines through. Despite the many wounds, Gaza's story remains full of tenderness, strength, and hope. Gaza has faced the harshest conditions, yet it has not surrendered or stopped dreaming of a better tomorrow. In each of its people lies the courage of a struggle and a desire to build a future that restores Gaza's charm and peace. Resilience and determination to live with dignity burns within Palestinians in Gaza, and with each passing day, hope is somehow maintained and the will to move forward grows despite all the hardships.
The ocean of dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss. Allahumma wa man aradani bisu'in farad wa man kadani fakad waj'alni min ahsani 'abidika nasiban 'indak wa aqrabiyyan manzilatan mink wa akhassiyyan zulfatan ladak فإنه لا ينال ذلك إلا بفضلك. Brothers and sisters, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. Allahumma wa man aradani bisu'in fa'arid. O Allah, whoever desires evil for me, desire it for him. Wa man kadani fakid. And whoever deceives me, deceive him. وَجَعَلْنِي مِنْ أَحْسَنِ عَبِيدِكَ نَصِيبًا عِنْدَكَ Make me one of the most excellent of your slaves who share the best reward from you. وَأَقْرَبِهِمْ مَنْزِلَةً مِنْكَ The nearest of them in station to you. وَأَخَسِّهِمْ زُلْفَةً لَدَيْكَ And the most elect of them in proximity to you. فَإِنَّهُ لَا يُنَالُ ذَلِكَ إِلَّا بِفَضْلِكَ For that cannot be attained except by your bounty. We have discussed so far about the great ocean of bounty and mercy of the Almighty Allah, the generosity of the Almighty Allah. And regarding that, this part continues, وَجُدْ لِي بِجُودِكَ وَعْتِفْ عَلَيَّ بِمَجْدِكَ Grant generously to me through your munificence. Incline toward me with your splendor, وَحْفَظْنِي بِرَحْمَتِكَ And protect me with your mercy. This great ocean of mercy of the Almighty Allah is what is saving us all from the tribulation and chastisement of the hereafter. Now, in this part, we read, وَمَنْ أَرَادَنِي بِسُوءٍ فَأَرِدْ O Allah, whoever desires evil for me, desire it for him. The enemies that actually desire evil for human beings are different. Some of them are Satan's. We have satanic temptations. And in the Holy Quran, we have different instances of it. Also, the carnal soul of every human being. And an evil friend, maybe. Some of us have friends that do not want good for us. They desire evil for us. So, we ask the Almighty Allah in this part, وَمَنْ أَرَادَنِي بِسُوءٍ فَأَرِدْهُ وَمَنْ كَادَنِي فَكِدْهُ. O Allah, whoever desires evil for me, desired for him, and whoever deceives me, deceive him.
Oh my Lord, my Lord, my Lord, strengthen my limbs for your service and sustain the strength of my hands to preserve in your service and bestow upon me the eagerness to fear you and constantly serve you so that I may lead myself towards you in the field with the vanguards who are in the fore rank and be swift towards you amongst those who hasten towards you and urge eagerly to be near you and draw myself towards you like those who sincerely draw themselves towards you and to fear you like the fear of those who believe firmly in you and that I may join the congregation of the faithful congregated near you.
Thank you Allah that we're here feeling so good about all the things that we went through knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever, the feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
So the temptation and deceiving power of these dangerous enemies is so strong. Those enemies are Satan, carnal soul, and evil friends. They are so dangerous that even Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam seeks Allah's assistance for fighting them. Allahumma wa man aradani bisu'in farid. O Allah, who desires evil for me, desire it for him. Previously, regarding the different parts of the Divine Kumail supplication, we have had detailed discussions on Satan, the carnal soul, and the evil friends in this version of the program. Anyway, if one wants to be the most excellent, the nearest, the most elevated servant of Allah, he should have faith together with certainty and acceptable sincerity, valuable deeds, righteous morality, especially piety to keep him from wrongdoing. And it is exactly what the Holy Quran states, إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ أَتْقَاكُمْ. Surely, the most honorable of you with Allah is the one among you most pious. So piety is the base of human prosperity in this world and the last day. And it has three different stages: general, special, and the most special. The general piety is doing the obligatory deeds and avoiding unlawful ones. The special piety is avoiding undesirable deeds as well as the permissible deeds to the greatest extent possible. And finally, the most special piety is avoiding anything that prevents the heart from Allah's remembrance. And I assume we have had detailed discussion over this issue. Let us end this episode with a great story cited in one of the historical books. It is cited in the books of history about the life of Khaja Nizam al-Mulk that one day he met a pious servant of Allah. He told the pious man, "Ask me something so that I may give it to you, because you are in need and I am needless." The pious man said, "I want Allah and nothing except Him, because asking from anyone except Allah will be below my standards. How can I ask this from you then?" And Khaja Nizam al-Mulk said, "If you do not ask me anything, let me ask you something." The pious man said, "What is it?" And he replied, "When you remember Allah in your prayers, remember me too." The pious man said, "When I have the blessing of remembering Allah, I forget my own self. How can I remember you?" فَإِنَّهُ لَا يُنَالُ ذَٰلِكَ إِلَّا بِفَضْلِكَ. We ask the Almighty Allah, we ask from His bounty to help us remember Him much. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you throughout my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the Israeli Watch. Several topics have been the focus of Zionist media, the most prominent being Israel's apparent failure in achieving its objectives after 6 months of war, ongoing negotiations in Cairo, as well as continuing protests against Netanyahu, with polls indicating Gantz's continued progress. In addition to the anxiety among Zionists about Iran's response to the attack on the consular affairs section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. I'd like to go ahead and welcome our guest today, military and strategic analyst, General Hisham Jaber. Welcome, General.
Thank you.
After 6 months, the occupation failed to achieve its objectives. Neither Hamas was weakened, nor were the captives or the displaced from the south and north able to return, and resistance rockets continue to fall on the Gaza Strip. The failure to achieve the objectives was accompanied by a failure to return the Zionist displaced from the south and north to them. A poll showed that most displaced people will not return to the settlements before Hamas is destroyed and Hezbollah is pushed away from the borders. So, General, as we saw in the Hebrew media, do you believe the Zionist war on Gaza indeed has now ended in failure?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you have to listen to the press conference who made the chief of staff last Sunday. He did recognize that Israel was defeated. Why defeated? When the army cannot achieve any goals and have a lot of casualties and loss, means was defeated. They didn't achieve any goals. Tactical goals were liberate the hostages, POW, destroy tunnels, or last found them, and liberate, and block Hamas potential, military potential. They did not achieve any goal. Well, and strategic goal was to evacuate Gaza from its population.
Well, what about the Zionist entity's northern front? What do you believe is on the horizon there?
Say again?
On the northern front with Lebanon.
North front, they have big problem. They cannot stay at this in this situation. They have two pressure. And first of all, the displaced people, 100,000, who lost, and we saw them. Second, there is 45 soldiers and officers, at least three divisions. They are in top, ready alert for 6 months. It's heavy, and it's in case of peace, it's not normal on the military life. How there is under pressure and fighting. And third, they have casualties every day, hemorrhagie, they call it. So they cannot stay in this situation. They have to make such breakthrough to go out of that loose cycle.
Yes.
They try to provoke Hezbollah to start the big war.
General, it seems that the majority of Zionists prefer Netanyahu and his government to go and hold early elections. What are the implications of this, do you believe?
They cannot do it.
Why?
And according to their constitution, the government cannot be replaced or changed, or any new election, only if this government will be self-destruction,
yes,
or resign money from their members or something like this. Netanyahu, for this reason, doesn't want...
And this might happen?
I will continue. Netanyahu doesn't want any agreement in Cairo, because of in case of ceasefire or any agreement, maybe it will be renewed for a few weeks or 1 month or more. In this case, they can make election, new election. Everybody ask for new election, but we cannot make election in case of war.
Well, how reliable are these opinion polls, in your opinion? Do they actually reflect what they want for their Zionist leaders?
Netanyahu prefers to be, because if Netanyahu will go, if they make election, Netanyahu will lose his seat. Everybody knows this. If he loses the seat, he will go somewhere else.
Yes.
Everybody knows. He has interest personally with his team to stay in the power, to continue the war, not to have any break or any armistice or any agreement, to stop the fire. That's clear, making clear. Maybe he, under the pressure of the society, and especially the families of the hostages.
So he'll continue to go ahead and ask from the Americans, correct?
Yes, he has interest to continue the war and ask the help of the United States of America. The same case, why he's doing, he want to go out, he want to go and choose another battlefield out of Gaza and out of Palestine, and ask the American for help.
Well, with that,
for
General,
this case, he is trying to provoke Hezbollah.
Well, General, is the Zionist entity in a state of unprecedented civil strife or conflict?
Military.
Yes.
Point of view. He cannot, open another front. Gaza, very small. And they said that...
But what I mean, General, the people here, as we've seen, they have become violent.
Yes.
And now, as we saw, they're actually attacking each other now. Is this going to cause infliction and problems inside?
A risk of civil war.
Yes.
I think it's the beginning, It's first time in the history we find the people that with this divergence, and with this aggressivity, they are aggressive, they became against each other.
So we expect the attacks to continue?
Of course. of course it will continue, I think, especially when we'll arrive to the end without any success. They have to admit that they have been defeated. They have to build up a court, a trial, and you will see a big change in the history of this Kayan Zionist.
The families of the captives participating in the protest demonstrations against Netanyahu hold him responsible for the failure to reach a swap deal and accuse him of sacrificing their children for his personal political interests. Well, General, to what extent are the protests of these Zionist captives' family actually going to be pressuring Netanyahu to conclude a swap deal, in your opinion?
I'm not sure they will agree. As I told you, Netanyahu doesn't have any interest. He did promise them, and I heard him last week said, my prime interest and to do. He said this 5 months ago. He did not, you know, he doesn't care to save the hostages. He's interested to bring their body after they have been killed. It's according to their, religion, to their belief, to
yes.
their... From 8 October until now, 73 hostages were killed by Israeli fire. Everybody knows this. But he will not save them. He is not interested to save them. He has other interests. What is the other interest? Is to stay in the power.
Do you believe that Washington is capable of imposing its proposals in negotiations on Washington? On Netanyahu, excuse me.
Capable or not capable, this is the question. But Washington is making a lot of pressure. Washington is interested to have a ceasefire because Washington has a pressure from inside, it has a pressure from outside, and even the allies of the United States. When you hear that 25 countries from European Union are with the ceasefire.
Including Britain,
Britain, Britain, yes, even Britain. Britain, why Britain? Under the pressure of the population, the public opinion, especially after the massacre of the International Central Kitchen.
Hezbollah's leader, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, has delivered his second speech in days addressing the attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus, describing the attack as the biggest Israeli escalation against the IRGC. Meanwhile, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, was Israel of the repercussions of the attack during a visit to Damascus. I would like to go ahead and thank our guest today, military and strategic analyst General Hisham Jabed, for joining us today. Thank you very much, General. Until next time, salam.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be examining a very important question. That question is related to zakat, or the alms tax. And this is a question that a lot of people ask. The question is this. When we want to pay the alms tax, the zakat, of course, right now we're considering zakat and alms tax in a very general manner of charity. We're not specifically talking about the zakat, which is a specific type of charity and becomes obligatory in certain situations. So this is important to take into consideration before we begin examining this question. So the question again is, who are we supposed to pay our charity to, or who deserves to receive our charity and our alms tax? Let's examine this question by probing into the verses of the Holy Quran. Fortunately, this question has been addressed in the Holy Quran in some of its verses. And in one verse of the Holy Quran, we read the following. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Charities are only for the poor and the needy, and those employed to collect them, and those whose hearts are to be reconciled, and for the freedom of slaves and the debtors, and in the way of Allah and for the traveler. This is an ordinance from Allah, and Allah is all-wise, all-knowing. Right, so in this verse of the Holy Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he mentions a number of different groups of people who we can donate our charities to. Like, for example, it begins by mentioning the poor and the needy, obviously. The people who are employed to collect the alms tax, so like the tax collectors themselves, they can benefit from the charity and the alms tax that they're collecting under certain situations and certain conditions. Those whose hearts are to be reconciled. This mu'allifatul qulub, this is a reference to like people who might not be Muslim or might not be adhering to the same religious sect that we adhere to. They might not be Shia, they might belong to another Islamic sect. And by spending our, you know, the charity, the money that we want to donate to charity on them and helping them, we could perhaps attract them to Islam or attract them to the Shia faith. This is another way in which we can spend our charity. For the freedom of slaves, we can use it to free slaves. Obviously, this isn't exactly applicable in our time. The next group is debtors. People who are in debt, we want to repay their debt for them. We may use our charity to repay their debt for them. And in the way of Allah and for the traveler, people who are traveling, they might have, their resources might have finished in their journey, and they might be requiring some additional assistance to get back to their homeland. We can use it. We can use our charity for them. In this connection, it's also been mentioned that Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam said, "The poor man is he who does not beg from people despite his poverty. The destitute lives in harsher conditions than him, and the wretched one lives in the most strained and straitened circumstances of them all." These are like different levels of poverty and poor people, to whom we may distribute our charity to. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at people who we are supposed to pay our charities to in the light of the Quran and the Hadith. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key, an IRIB English radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Coming up is the news.